and in hospital filtration environments such as local or national emergencies. The revolutionary Berkey Light removes pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful or unwanted chemicals to below detectable levels. It also removes foul tastes and odors like that rotten egg smell of sulfide, and it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Catherine Albrecht, who has written the book Spy Chips, who's actually done extensive work on the RFID programs and other identifying programs that are being developed and being implemented and used throughout the entire world. It was just about 2 months ago when we interviewed Dr. Albrecht, and she was commenting about this program that they now have. They've started working on the census this year. Why? The census is not supposed to occur until next year, but they've started this year. They've sent workers all over the United States with a little GPS localizer, and they'll come to your front porch, and they will they may or may not knock at your door, but they will find exactly your coordinates from the GPS global positioning satellite, and then they will record that, so the master database that contains everybody's name will also know your exact coordinates. But what was so interesting is they're not just doing that in the United States, they're doing it throughout the entire world. Why are they doing it throughout the world? Because everybody is to be marked and followed, and they're collecting dossiers on people all throughout the world. Dr. Albrecht, thank you so much for being with us again.
Well, hello, Dr. Stan. Yeah, there is so much happening in the world of privacy, and we're beginning to see something that I've been pointing out for, 10 years now, which is that all of these technologies are beginning to coalesce with the fight for our freedoms and our God-given right to be independent. And we're starting to see the technologies that were originally developed for military use, that were originally developed for marketing purposes, that had sort of their genesis in other areas of our society, kind of coming full circle. And now we're beginning to see those technologies turned against the people. And I think that's really where my work and my decade worth of research and my concerns over these large databases and the increasing, what I call the databasification of our lives, putting everything that we do under the microscope and ultimately under the control of those who would dominate us, I think that's really where a lot of my research is sort of coming into the limelight, because we are entering into that period. You know, you take a look at what's happening in Iran, you look at what's happening in China, you look at what's happening, in Guatemala, where you had a gentleman who posted a 140-word text, in fact, I think it was only an 80-character text, on Twitter, and he's now facing a possible 5 years in jail for criticizing the banking system in Guatemala. You know, you start looking at all of these ways that governments are beginning to use these tools to identify and track people down, and it's really becoming kind of an arms race. You know, that these recent protests, these recent the world's awareness and the eyes on what's happening is happening because of the Internet. So it's really cutting both ways, but we're certainly entering into a fascinating time.
Well, of course, we know that we developed a lot of our military satellites to spy on the wicked communists, but now they're not the wicked communists, and the satellites are still up there. Why now they're spying on the American people, looking at the fields to see what the farmers are growing. They can really watch anybody anywhere in the United States. And for some of the local counties are hiring our military satellites to track and see if you might have done a horrible thing. You might even have built a building on your own private property without a permit. We'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Catherine Elbeck. Well, you go right ahead and pick up the story there.
Well, you know, there's been probably the big news today has been the announcement that Google is going to be going head-to-head and fighting against Microsoft in the operating system arena. And this is a really relevant story, I think, for people who care about liberty. And maybe at first glance it's not clear the reason why. So with your permission, I'd actually like to talk a little bit about Google and about operating systems and about the future, I believe, of what's going to happen with our communications and our use of computers.
You go right ahead. In fact, I'm looking forward to what things that you think are important.
All right. Well, here, let me give people just a little bit of background about the computer and the way that we use computers today all across the globe. 90% of the computers operation today are running a Microsoft operating system, or an OS, OS standing for operating system. So 90% of the computers, whether they're a desktop computer in an office building at a corporation, on someone's desk at home, in a child's bedroom, whether it's a laptop, the executive sitting next to you on the commuter train, 90% of those computers are running the Microsoft operating system. Now, we know that Microsoft has dominated the computer arena for as long as there have been personal computers. So we're talking now about 20 years since Bill Gates really kind of cornered that market. And as a result, Bill Gates has become, I think the last time I checked, he was the richest man on Earth. I think he may have fallen to second place now, but he is certainly immensely wealthy. And that's because if you think about how many computers there are on the planet, and you understand the fact that every one of those computers running a Microsoft operating system has had to provide a licensing fee to Microsoft, then you begin to see how whoever controls that company becomes immensely wealthy and immensely powerful. Well, that paradigm is starting to get challenged. We already know that Macintosh / Apple has put a dent. They've kind of been a sort of a gnat buzzing around Microsoft, but they've never really seriously, at least not in the last decade, seriously threatened Microsoft's dominance in this operating system arena. Well, today, Google came out with, I wouldn't call it an announcement, because Google doesn't really do press releases on this sort of thing, but what they do is they post things on their blog, and there are people who avidly read Google's blog, because Google essentially today dominates the Internet in virtually every way you could use that phrase. And so people avidly read their blog, and there was an announcement or a statement on the blog that Google is going to go into the operating system market by the mid to end part of 2010.
Please hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Dr. Catherine Albrecht. And, of course, we're talking about the fact that Google now is talking about going into the operating systems. In other words, Microsoft has dominated operating systems in the past, and now Google has announced, at least on their blog, that they're going to go into operating systems so that you might be able to get a computer with simply the Google operating system rather than the Microsoft, because most computers have a Microsoft operating system as the basis of their, certainly of the use of their computers. So pick up the story there.
Sure. Yeah, and you know, most of us, when we get a computer, we either order it online, we might have a Dell, we might have a Toshiba, we might have a Lenovo. You know, there's a variety of different brands, but what they all share in common is the operating system, and most of them are coming prepackaged with Windows Vista or Windows XP. And what you need to realize is every computer you walk into, I don't know, are Best Buy and Circuit City even still in business these days? I know they're both facing the possibility of Chapter 11. But for most of us, you know, you walk into an electronic store, You talk to the salesperson, you test out a bunch of different keyboards and a bunch of different screens, and then you put together your configured computer, and you bring it home, and it comes with Microsoft on it. Now, what you don't realize is that Dell, Toshiba, Lenovo, whoever it is who created the computer had to pay a licensing fee to Microsoft in order to get software on there that would run. You know, your operating system is what makes the lights go on. You know, it's the backbone to running your computer. So that's where these companies have really been beholden to Microsoft in a lot of ways. Now, what is the game changer here has been the introduction of Linux, and I want to talk to your listeners just a little bit about the Linux operating system, Linux. It is an open source operating system, and you kind of need to understand what that means in order for all these changes to make sense. Open source means that anyone who knows how to program is able, or program and understands how the Linux operating system works, is able to see the code, to actually look at what it is that drives the computer and how it is that the Linux operating system does things like, oh, I don't know, create windows and allow your mouse to move around and run the sound card and all of the things that it does. Now, being open source means that there's an army of computer programmers out there who, in their spare time, just for fun, sit around kicking the tires on the Linux operating system and improving it. Whereas Microsoft, on the other hand, is not open source, it's a black box. The only people who know what goes on inside of the Microsoft operating system are the people in Redmond, Washington, who work for Microsoft. So they're all in their locked offices, on their facility, figuring out what to do with this operating system. So it's two very, very different models. And what that has resulted in is Linux being really robust. I have Linux on my computer. It doesn't crash. It is virtually virus immune. In other words, if I go on to the internet and I land on a bad website, you know, they're always trying to tempt you into those with those emails that say, hey, click here to see Paris Hilton in her bikini or whatever. If I go on to one of those websites, my computer will not get infected. It won't get a virus. It won't come down with malware. If I open up the wrong email or click on an email attachment, my computer will not become infected because my computer runs Linux, and Linux is very robust and very protected against those kinds of viruses. So the people who develop those viruses, they write them for Microsoft because they know that the majority of people are using the Microsoft operating system, and also because Microsoft has huge gaping security holes in it that make it very easy to exploit the operating system to plant malware and spyware and zombify your computer and use it to send out spam and all the other things that they do. Now, up until now, most people have been a little bit intimidated by the idea of getting rid of Microsoft and switching over to Linux. It's kind of the geeky operating system. You know, people in the know have all switched over. My husband switched us over about 5 years ago. Most of my friends in the IT community are running Linux or else they're running a Mac. Very few people who are really, on the cutting edge of technology are running Windows at all. But your average computer user, you know, my mom, my sister-in-law, those are not people who are going to think, oh, yeah, let me get Linux. So what Google is doing is Google has actually adapted this free Linux operating system. And when I say free, this open source model, anyone can grab it, anyone can use it, anyone can modify it, anyone can package it up and put a bow on it and make it available for sale or give it away. And so Google has jumped onto the Linux bandwagon, and their Chrome operating system, which not to be confused, by the way, with their Chrome browser, which is already available. The browser just lets you surf the net. It's like Firefox or Internet Explorer. But we're talking operating system. The thing that really runs your entire computer is going to be based on Linux. So this means that your average computer user out there will have the confidence of the Google name, which I don't believe they should be confident in at all from a liberty or a privacy standpoint, but they certainly are competent from a technological standpoint. They'll have the advantage of the operating system being totally free, because Google is going to offer it, we believe, free of charge. So there will be no more licensing fees paid to Microsoft. They'll have the advantage of the Google Chrome operating system being fully integrated with the Internet and also being very robust and when I say robust, I mean it doesn't crash. You know, when I used to use Microsoft, I would have the experience constantly of programs freezing up. I'd be right in the middle of using Photoshop and modifying a picture, and boom, the mouse would freeze or the screen wouldn't move, and I'd have to reboot the whole computer. It happened to me all the time. That never happens to me on my Linux-based operating system. I'm completely free from those problems. So I can turn my computer on and literally not have to reboot it for 10, 12, 15 days until it just dawns on me I probably should. So that's the sense of robustness. Now, let me tell you the downside. So those are sort of the upsides and why people are really talking a lot about this. This has been the big buzz on the Internet today and among the IT community. The problem with this, if Google does come in and take over market share and become our operating system, is that Google has a totally different long-term model in mind for how you and I will use our computers. Now, Microsoft loves the idea that you sit at a desktop, you've got a hard drive running Windows, you go to your local software store, and you plunk down $200 and you come home with a tax preparation program or a word processing program. You install Microsoft Word, you have to pay for it. You buy Photoshop in a box, and it comes with the CD, and you install it. That's their model. Google's model is night and day different. What Google envisions us all doing down the road, and they'll have the clout to do it if they promote this operating system on us, they envision us no longer even using hard drives eventually. They envision everything that you do on the computer being done on the Internet. Every file that you save, every letter that you write, every tax statement you prepare would be stored on a Google server out there on their network, subject to their turning it over to the government in response to a subpoena or a warrant, subject to their scarfing through it for keywords so they can sell you stuff and put advertising in your email and other places, subject to them essentially having total control over whether you have access to a computer account at all. So that's the model, and in fact, I'd like to read a quote. There's been a lot of comments flying around about this today. It was a Drudge Report headline in, 50-point font. It was a big deal today. It was up on Slashdot, which is where they call it News for Nerds. It's where all the IT people go, and this really has been the buzz of the net. So let me just read you what I thought was the most compelling paragraph that I read in all the stuff about this today. Here we go. Google's overall strategy is to get everyone on the web more and more of the time until the boundaries between what's on their local system and what's on the web blur completely. Or even better, storage in the cloud, and that's in quotes, where Google can search and index your content and sell ads against it, becomes the rule, and the computer you hold is just an extension of the web. Now, Google's long-term vision is this cloud, where we are all sort of part of a community or a communal collection of all of our communications out there under their control, on their servers and in their hands. And that development, if we move in that direction, and the indications certainly would say that we will, then we are going to be subject to the biggest power grab that has ever occurred in the history of communications. Because what this means is you would no longer even be able to write a letter and hit print if Google chose for you not to be able to do that. Is that going to happen tomorrow or next year? No. But that is Google's long-term vision, is absolute total control over not only all of the Internet, which they're pushing for, over not only all of the information on planet Earth, which they've clearly said they want. In fact, one of the Google founders said that they would like to become the mind of God. I'm not exaggerating. And this means control over all of that. It also means control over books. Google is working right now to scan all of the books in print and put them online, presumably to eliminate the printing of books altogether so that everything will be online, and you will have to have the ability to log on. See, that this is the other piece to this. This is happening hand in hand with these increasing identification and authentication requirements throughout our society. And what's going to happen, and it's going to be a perfect storm, just like 9/11, just like September 11th was to pass through the Patriot Act and all of these Big Brother airport screening and email scanning and everything else that they're doing, there's going to be, I predict, a perfect storm on the Internet. And when that happens, and it'll involve some horrible thing that even liberty lovers will be mortified by, whether it's child pornography or who knows what, something so bad will happen on the net that people will demand the government take control. And that's when all this stuff will be the pulling tight of the net.
And that is then when Google, which already seems to have a very close relationship with government, would be able to expand their control over our computers and really everything we do on a computer. We're going to be back in just a moment with Catherine Albrecht. Ladies and gentlemen, freedom is under attack today. There is a plan. It is being played out, and most people have very little idea what's really going on. Well, it would have to be then some sort of a catastrophic event to actually allow this to come about.
Well, I think it's going to be one of a couple of things. It's either going to be that you will be so inundated with spam and garbage that you'll not only permit them to begin controlling the net, but you'll actually start demanding it at the point of a pitchfork, as I like to say. They love to get us to that point where we demand the chains be put around our own ankles, because then they don't have the opposition factor to deal with. We certainly have seen that in other arenas, most specifically the issue of illegal immigration, giving them the impetus to have people demand more solid forms of identification and more regular presentation of identification. So I think we'll see that on the one hand. And I think on the other hand, we will see some horrible event, some horrible ring of child pornography uncovered, some horrible terrorist plot foiled at the last minute or even being carried out through the Internet. Something will happen that will cause, you know, Time Magazine and USA Today and all of these media outlets, CNN, Fox, all of the media outlets that they use to manipulate the American public will go on a rampage, speaking of nothing other than the need to police the Internet. And when that happens, and when we have put all of our eggs in one basket and everything we do is on the Internet, which is exactly where we're being pushed right now as a society, then at that point you will have to pony up fingerprints, iris scans, a microchip implant. I don't know what it's going to be, but you will have to identify yourself in order to log on to the Internet, and your every move on the net will be monitored as closely as your travel by airline is monitored today. I predict that in the same way that right now you can't get on a plane without, you know, being subjected to practically a full-body pat-down. In fact, they even have the nakedizing machines in place in some airports that you literally walk through a machine that, you know, sees every outline of your genitalia. I believe that we will have the same degree of scrutiny in order to get on the net. And the same justification will be used. We need to know who's on the Internet because people could go on the Internet and commit crimes. And we need to be able to track, monitor, follow, and regulate who is allowed on the Internet. And at that point, they will have, just as the no-fly list exists today to prevent people from flying on the airline if you have somehow triggered some government agency to call you a potential terrorist, I believe that those of us who are fighting for freedom, who are speaking out against the government, who are exercising our First and Second and Fourth Amendment rights under the Constitution, that we will be among the first to be told that we pose a threat and we won't be able to use the Internet. And that's going to effectively shut us all down. You know, we communicate right now primarily through email. We communicate, I know there are probably many, many thousands of listeners hearing our voices right now over the Internet. And as radio stations struggle more and more radio programming and content is moving to the Internet. We see the Boston Globe about to shut down because there's no longer a market for paper newspapers. So even your ability to access news and information would be curtailed if you get to that point where everything's on the net and you get cut off. So, you know, it's the same. We're seeing it in so many arenas. If we move to a cashless society, your ability to buy and sell will be cut off. If your number no longer works, if someone in the government decides to shut down your account, you will be, in effect, for all intents and purposes, rendered helpless. You'll no longer be able to buy or sell or get a job or rent an apartment.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Dr. Albrecht is simply saying that if these things come to pass, why, we will be those of us who speak out against the government, who share our concern about this move towards a tyrannical state, we'll be excluded from the Internet. Certainly, we depended so much on the Internet now for communications, and certainly for getting the truth out is one of the few means by which we can circumvent the controlled media. But even that, of course, will be severely limited. So go right ahead and pick up this story there.
Yeah, and I think people need to understand the global situation going on right now, and it helps sometimes to have this dialogue less about the American government, which I think a lot of us still have a deep and burning desire to believe is not going to become completely tyrannical, and maybe to look at what is happening in nations that we all acknowledge are oppressive and tyrannical. So let's take a look, for example, at what's happening over in China right now. And that is a communist nation. That is a nation that massacred people in Tiananmen Square 20 years ago, and nothing has changed since that time. It's still under the same regime. It's still under the same heavy hand of oppression. Now, China has been extremely concerned about keeping its citizens in what they call a state of peace and harmony. Now, that's a great euphemism. If you keep your citizens in harmony, what it means is they keep their heads low, they comply, they don't make waves, and above all, they don't speak out against the oppression being meted out to them by the government. So that's the harmony that China's looking for. That's a big word over there. And one of the ways that they have been maintaining harmony is by controlling the Internet. China, you know, people talk about the Great Wall of China, you know, this big, huge wall that they had to keep invaders out. Well, nowadays, IT specialists, people who work in computers, refer to the Great Firewall of China. And a firewall is a way of keeping unwanted traffic out, keeping hackers out. If you've got a home system, you put a firewall up so people can't just log in and start messing with your files. Well, China has sort of this national firewall, and it has the ability, although not as much as it would like, but it certainly has a powerful ability to block certain websites from reaching China at all. And it exercises that periodically. One of the times it came up was just last month, in the month of June. China blocked access to a lot of social networking sites, to Twitter and MySpace and certain searches on Google and other places, so that no one could search for Tiananmen Square. And that was because they, you know, if you search for Tiananmen Square, there are some shocking images of people who were brutally murdered by that regime, people covered in blood, people run over by vehicles, people whose legs were run over and amputated. It's horrifying. People with big gaping holes in their flesh where they were hit with hollow point bullets by the Chinese military during that Tiananmen Square massacre. And they don't want that because, of course, those images do not promote harmony.
Well, of course, you know,
Catherine, nor should they, right?
Catherine, most people in America have forgotten that when the Tiananmen Square massacre occurred, and there was tremendous outrage here in America, what did the Bush administration, the first Bush administration, do? They punished China by giving them most favored nation trade status. Most favored nation trade status, so that they could increase their exports to America without tariffs. It was our leaders who were actually supporting this brutal regime, and we are continuing supporting them through massive, you know, infusions of money to International Planned Parenthood, which is supervising their one-child policy in China today, where people are severely punished if they have a second child, and literally became totally impoverished if they were to have a third child. But none of this could be going on without the full help and support and financing of our own government. This is what people do not understand. We point over there to the terrible things that are happening without ever realizing the miracle that we see, these buildings going up, these whole cities of skyscrapers, largely financed by funds from America, from the World Bank, which we fund, the International Monetary Fund, the East Asian Development Fund, banquets we fund, and, of course, from American banks and American corporations. In fact, we're giving General Motors $50 billion so they can come out with a smaller company, and they're going to be a smaller company when they come out of bankruptcy because they're shifting their production to communist China, to the BRIC nations, China, Brazil, Russia, and India, and we're financing that. The average American doesn't understand that these things are going on, and I share your concern about China, but I wonder about the people here in the United States who are doing everything they can to build up this tyrannical regime.
Well, and, you know, a lot, look at the products in our homes. You know, we individually have given huge sums of money to China, each of us, every time we buy one of their products.
And I agree with you totally, and I think that certainly this is one of the big problems, is that we're being encouraged to buy their products, you know. If we had a tariff on that, they have tariffs on our products. We can't take our products into China, but they can bring their products in here without charge. So why would our leaders be so foolish? Hang on there. We're going to be back here in just a minute. This is Dr. Stan, I guess. Dr. Catherine Albeck. Go right ahead, Catherine.
Well, you know, looking at China, because I think our discussion has reminded people of just exactly what kind of a nation China is, and it is helpful, I think, to look at their interest in and ability to control, monitor, and censor the Internet, and why that is really becoming a huge focus for them. There was, just a couple of weeks ago, China came out with a mandate that all computers sold in the country, so this would be all the Toshibas and the Lenovos and the Dell computers and all the other stuff we talked about, would have to come equipped with censorship software that would actually block certain websites. And they gave the excuse, and this is the oldest one in the book, and it works really well, of saying they wanted to block access to pornography and things that would jeopardize the morals of the people of China. But then again, that concept of harmony came up, and it quickly became clear that they were also trying to block political dissident websites, websites critical of the regime, websites promoting Falun Gong and other forbidden religious practices, et cetera, et cetera. There was a big outcry, and that project has been put at least temporarily on hold, but the software exists, the interest exists, and it's all certainly there. Now, this week, we know that China had unrest, riots, actually, in a province that broke out on Sunday. 150, 160 people killed through ethnic violence happening in China between ethnic Muslims there and ethnic Chinese. So they're having all sorts of stuff go on. In fact, you can look at a headline on thedrudgereport.com, and you can see a chilling photograph of so many soldiers that the eye can barely see the end of them all marching in unison into that province. Well, one of the things that they did in response to what was happening on Sunday and Monday as this violence was occurring was they blocked access from China to Twitter. They blocked access to MySpace and Facebook, to any of the social networking sites. I believe they also blocked YouTube, where the people who were actually there on the ground were posting these images of what was happening there. So as the army apparently got into sort of a shooting match with a bunch of people, a lot of people killed, a lot of bloodshed, a lot of ugliness.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Albeck has been talking about the tragic slaughters here that occurred in China here this last last week, and hundreds of, at least 100 people killed, and many more than that actually wounded. And of course, but she points out, of course, one of the things that the Chinese government has tried to do is to block the internet transmission of pictures and information on the slaughter that's taken place there. And of course, this is certainly so important today, because now, of course, we have a little video cameras on many of the telephones, cellular telephones, and suddenly you can take the pictures of many of the horrible things. One picture is worth 1,000 words, and they don't want those 1,000 words to get out there. They don't want those pictures to get out, and of course they're blocking the internet. So go right ahead.
Well, and the reason this is important, China has been unable to block those images. People were able to go around them. The internet right now, and I'm a huge fan of Twitter, by the way. There was actually some conversation that Twitter, this new social networking site, you know, I don't know how joking it was, but they were saying they may actually nominate it for a Nobel Peace Prize. And I know a lot of people have maybe not heard of Twitter or don't know how Twitter works. So let me just take a second and explain that, because I think it's important in understanding what's happening in China and understanding sort of the state of this battle right now, this arms race for communication and technology. So Twitter is a website, twitter.com, where you can log on. You can create an account quickly and relatively anonymously. They do have your IP address. You're not totally anonymous. But you can go in there and you can create an account, and you can post things that then are disseminated instantly. So you make your little post. It's got to be 140 characters or less, which is really short. We're talking about maybe a sentence. That's your limit. That's all you get. And the reason they limited it to that is that's how much space you have on a BlackBerry or on a handheld, you know, an iPhone or any of these portable devices. Usually are limited to 140 characters. So you have these short little posts. And initially people kind of rolled their eyes and said, well, this is stupid, because people were going on and saying, I had cornflakes for breakfast. What did you have? You know, it was really not deep and meaningful conversations that were happening. So initially, we really didn't understand what Twitter would become or what its power would be. What has been happening, though, in the last few months is that Twitter has become an incredibly powerful political website for countries in turmoil and people who are being oppressed by their governments. So let me refer to Yugoslavia, let me refer to China, let me refer to Guatemala, let me refer to Iran, particularly with all of the demonstrations and protests over the recent election in Iran. So you certainly have like a lot of unrest in the world, and it is coalescing on Twitter. Now here's why. Let me give you an example that's a little clearer. Let's say, for the sake of argument, I'm in line for a Britney Spears concert. Can't imagine why I'd do that, but let's say I was. And there's a big long line, and I'm standing in the line waiting to get in, and all of a sudden I see, I don't know, fire trucks in the distance. And I see that they start turning people away at the door, or maybe the line stops moving. And I say, what in the world's going on? Well, I really don't have a way of knowing that. But with Twitter, the person at the front of the line who maybe saw, a fire, or maybe saw Britney collapse, or maybe was told by the guy at the gate, I'm sorry, we're shutting down the event today, that person probably has an iPhone, a BlackBerry, some kind of a handheld unit, and can instantly on the spot, right there in the line, put up a tweet on Twitter, 140 words, I'm at the Britney Spears concert, she's collapsed, concert is canceled. And now instantly people all over the world can know that information, including me standing, you know, a block away at the end of the line.
But how would you know that? Would you simply go to Twitter and put in Britney Spears
you
concert?
You would. That's exactly how it works. And so the Twitter community has evolved a way of doing this, where if there's a hot topic, then they have a little keyword. And if you're posting about that hot topic, like we recently had the Honduras coup, and if you looked up under Honduras, all of the information being posted on the Honduras coup was right there instantaneously on Twitter. Now, here's why this is crucial. Let's say I'm in the front of the line, and I've got my little camera phone, and I happen to take a picture of the fire or the bomb or the whatever it is. I can post that on my website, but nobody's going to find it. My website is one of a million websites on the Internet. Nobody would ever find my picture in real time, you know, in the next 5 minutes that I post on some random blog who knows where. So instead what happens now, and this is what's amazing, is I take the picture, I put it up on my random website, KatherineAlbrecht.com, but then I post a link on Twitter, and I say, Britney Spears concert canceled, fire in a palm tree, and I take a picture of it, I put it on my website, and I post on Twitter the link to my website. And now within seconds, people all over the world know instantaneously what just happened at that concert hall. That's what's happening in these countries. So now let's take this and make it political. You've got an uprising. You've got a riot. You've got a police action. You've got the police tasing somebody who's writhing on the ground. Anybody with this wireless technology who can take a picture, post it on a website, and post one sentence with a link on Twitter, instantly it goes viral, and thousands, millions of people can see it. And those people, the second they see it, they go, oh, my gosh, that's the kind of thing that's going to get censored. And so they grab the picture and they post it 1,000 other places. This is what happened to the Chinese government in the last 3 days. People in China were able, and they shut down Twitter. They tried completely shutting Twitter down so nobody in China could access it at all. But there are other ways of accessing Twitter. There's TweetDeck, there's other applications. People don't need to know what that is, but there's other ways to get in there. And they did it on the spot. So these people watching the riot police come in were photographing them. These people watching people getting shot in real time were taking video of it and putting it on the Internet and posting the links to those images on Twitter, and the whole world was watching. And China flipped out. China went nuts. They said, we've got to shut this thing down, and they couldn't. Now, here's how this ties back now to us. We are living in a time when the governments of the world are becoming consolidated. You of all people, Dr. Stan, we fully get this. Brotherhood of Darkness, you know this is a big picture, and these guys are all working in concert with each other. What they are now, staying up night, staring at their ceilings, these world leaders, trying to figure out at 2 in the morning, how can I shut this darn Internet down, because it's going to be our undoing unless we stop it now. They had no idea. Had they seen what the Internet was going to become, they would have outlawed it 10 years ago. They would have never let it get off the ground. But the reality is it is here, and we're using it, and we're grabbing that power, and we are putting it to use. The oppressed peoples of the world, we are now as powerful as they are in terms of transmitting information. See, that's the stranglehold that power has always had over the peoples of the world. They have controlled the means of communication. But that grasp, that control, is slipping away from them. We're not going to Fox News and CNN for our news anymore because we know they're lying to us. We're going to Twitter and we're seeing the actual picture. Show me the riot police right now. What are they doing? So they want to shut it down. Now, here's how I believe this shutting down process is likely to occur. You're going to see increasing consolidation on the net in the same way that Walmart now controls the majority of retail shopping in the States. It's soon going to control the majority of retail shopping on the globe, and then they're going to have the power to shut down your ability to buy underwear or socks or a pencil. That's going to happen in retail. Google is working to do the same exact thing on the Internet right now. And if they lock up, let me bring this full circle, if they lock up the operating system as well, if they make a world where you don't even have computer access unless it's through Google on the Internet, then once all these governments get together and start consolidating their thinking, because they all have the same goal right now, shut this darn Internet down. The minute they all do that, it's going to be a big security issue, mark my words, and it's probably going to involve mass casualty and all kinds of horror in order for them to justify it. But once they do it, there's going to be a global agreement on what has to occur for people to use that Internet, and it is going to be just as much feeling like you're being thrown against a wall and patted down and have a flashlight shine in your eyes as you do now to get on an airplane. You're going to have that same degree of scrutiny to get on the Internet. That's what's going to happen worldwide and globally. So then China won't have a problem. Because if China posts it up there, if somebody in China posts it, there's going to be nobody able to even grab it and use it because they know they're going to be prosecuted too. So it is going to be a stranglehold on the net. And right now we are in a massive arms race. So I want to tell everybody who can hear my voice, you guys need to fight for all you've got to defend the right to an uncensored and anonymous Internet. We have got to have the right to go on there anonymously, to go on there and post things, to not be subject to government scrutiny, to view things, to post things, to communicate, to email, you name it. We've got to defend the Internet just as much as we're defending our Second Amendment rights in this country, and possibly even more so.
Well, I think you make a very good case for that. It seems to me that we could use this Twitter, though, already to get your message out, my message out, the message of the other people in the alternative media who are trying to let people understand about these very powerful people who want to bring about a world government. How could we utilize that to our advantage?
It's powerful and it's wonderful. I'm a huge fan of Twitter, and I never thought I would be. I thought it was lame and stupid like everybody else until I'm seeing the power that it has. All you have to do is go on Twitter, and you don't even have to have a Twitter account, I don't believe, in order to search it. You might, but I don't know because I have one, so I don't know what it's like if you don't. But if I want to know what's happening in Honduras, or I want to know what's happening with tasers, or I want to know what's happening with whatever, there's a little search box on the right-hand side at twitter.com. You just type in your word, and all of the posts, which are called tweets, all these little short one sentences that have been posted, will be there for you to read. And they'll have links to stories, articles, pictures, YouTube, you name it. And if we've got an issue, like let me name a current issue right now, the PASS Act, right, the new form of Real ID, which we could do a whole other hour on, that PASS Act is being discussed right now on Twitter. So if there's a committee meeting, if something changes, if all of a sudden they throw in some additional piece to the legislation and we need to mobilize 10,000 people to make phone calls, Twitter would be the place to instantaneously report that. So you can create, if you go on there, you can create Dr. Stan. You just go on there and set up a new account called Dr. Stan. I would subscribe to it. And anything you post would immediately show up when I log in. It would show up almost like a little mini email on my screen, and I could see what you're up to. And I could click on yours and see all your posts. I've got like 150 posts right now up on my page on things that I follow and guests on my radio show and stuff that I'm up to. And anybody who logs on and starts following me is able to view my posts. Well, so it's really, I would encourage everybody out there, get on there, check it out, get your own, if you're an activist, get your own little zone on there, put a link on your website and ask people to follow you on Twitter, and you can instantaneously communicate. Much quicker than email, much more efficient.
Well, right now, before we go on, I want you to get out your website and tell people how they can get in touch with you and your ministry and hear your radio programs. And then, of course, we'll recommend that they get onto Twitter as well. But why don't you get your information out?
Absolutely. I am Catherine Albrecht. People may know me from Freedom to Fascism or my work fighting RFID or my best-selling book, Spy Chips. You can find my website at CatherineAlbrecht.com. I do a daily two-hour radio show right here on GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. I'm on from 4 to 6 p.m. right after Alex Jones on Channel 2. So if you know the GCN website, you can go to GCN Live. Click on Listen Live in the upper right-hand corner. That's GCNLive.com, I should say. Upper right-hand corner, click on Listen Live, and I'm on Channel 2 from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. If you miss it or you're working, you can't hear me then, you can download MP3 files of my show. And if you go on to CatherineAlbrecht.com, we're going to be posting the descriptions of all the shows so you can even search them and listen to programs that I've done over the last 2 years of running the show. The on Twitter, just look up Catherine Albrecht. I've protected my tweets so you'd have to ask for permission to follow me, but I'd be happy to grant that to you. I'm also on MySpace. I'm on Facebook. I'm really starting to move into this online networking world. So you can follow me any one of those places or be my friend on MySpace. Happy to communicate. And then the other thing I want to let people know is as of January, I am working for a company that I hugely believe in. And it is the alternative to Google. Back in November, Google started scaring me so much because I saw this big picture, and I started feeling like we were all sitting helpless on a train tracks while a huge train barreled down on us, and that train is Google. And I searched the Internet and found an alternative to Google, and I have become their biggest fan. I'm now literally working for them as their PR and marketing person here in the States to let everybody know about them. It is a company called Ixquick. And if that sounds crazy, you don't have to remember it, because our big announcement yesterday is that we have a brand new name, and I love this name. It's easy to remember, and I want you guys to record this in your brains. It is Start Page. Start, like start caring about your privacy. Page, like web page. It is a search engine alternative to Google. So let's say you want to look up the rash that Junior has, or you want to look up, what kind of rounds you need for your new rifle or whatever it might be. You can go on to startpage.com and blow off Google. Stop going to Google. They're recording everything you search for. They're creating dossiers and profiles on us based on those searches. You need to get the heck out of Google immediately. Switch over to StartPage. They are certified. I've certified them. A third-party European privacy audit has certified them that they do not record any information about you. You can search for whatever you want in total privacy, complete anonymity. They don't even keep a record of your IP address, so they can't even prove if you were on their website or not. Wonderful website, wonderful people. I love working with them. I'm a huge believer. And StartPage.com. We're up on Twitter, MySpace, Facebook, the whole nine yards. And if you go to StartPage.com, you'll see a little link on there that says Add StartPage to your browser. Click it, and what it'll do is it will take the StartPage search engine and put it right into your Firefox, your Internet Explorer, your Google Chrome, whatever you're using to browse the web, and you'll have a little window in the upper corner. So when you want to search for something, it will give you StartPage search results, private, anonymous. You'll be invisible to everybody, and those searches are fabulous. So you will have all of the privacy and all the great search results, but none of the problems of working with Google. So I'm a huge believer. Startpage.com.
In fact, I've been using it here for the last month or two, and I'm really very, very pleased with it. That's startpage.com, and I've already got it on my favorite places to go to.
Hooray. Glad to hear it. Yeah, so, you know, these are the kinds of things. We need to support the few businesses that are out there that are doing good. And it really is, when I say an arms race, I don't mean that literally. There's not weapons here, but we all know the pen is mightier than the sword. Communication is the most powerful thing we have at our disposal. And we are right now in I believe, a war for our very lives when it comes for our ability to communicate. They are clamping down. They're trying, but the technology is too nimble. We're too fast for them. They can't catch up with us until they globally consolidate. And I think we have a few more years before they're going to actually create UN-based mandates top-down that control and lock up the Internet. We've got some time, and during that time, we need to be doing everything we can on that Internet to communicate, find each other, create networks, and get people agitated so they fight back against this garbage.
I agree with you. And, of course, I'm doing a series of articles on Andrew Jackson, President Jackson, and his farewell address in 1837. But he was talking back in those days, even in 1833, about how the banks at that time had bought up the support of all the major media so they could control the reality of the people. And ladies and gentlemen, very little has changed in the intervening 180 or so years.
Is that true? You know, I hadn't heard that story. Wow.
Hold up. We'll be right back. Oh, Catherine, go right ahead. You must get my newsletter, don't you, or do you?
You know, I believe I do. I need to probably pull them out. I'd love to learn more about this Andrew Jackson story.
All right, fine. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll get you off the net or send that article. It was about 2 months ago. And suddenly we simply quote from his writings, what he wrote in 1833, what he said in 1833 about the control of the medium. And, of course, they're using the same techniques today. Only, I think you're right, we do have these wonderful other means of control, but I'd never even thought of Twitter or of Facebook or MySpace, you know, as means of reaching large numbers of people. And if they really go there, I think we have to use every means we possibly can.
Well, and it's exciting to me. You know, I'm concerned because Google wants to buy Twitter. And, you know, Google not only you really have to understand the reach of Google in order to understand why it's crucial that you stop using Google. You know, Google has one of the most sophisticated satellite imaging systems in the world. They have pictures of your backyard. they are driving millions of miles of road worldwide, taking photographs of every street, every house, every tree, every fire hydrant. They want to be the mind of God, as we've discussed. They are taking our medical information. They're working with Blue Cross Blue Shield in Massachusetts to digitize and put all of the medical information of people in that state who have Blue Cross Blue Shield coverage into their databases. They're now working to take over the computer market, as I discussed, with this Chrome OS coming out next year. That could mean locking up the world's computers. They are mind-blowing. The wife of one of the founders of Google she's got a big project where they are mapping chromosomes of people. They actually want to get your DNA information and have you put all that online. It's just incredible. Google has 1 million square feet of office space inside of NASA. Why would they need that? You know, when you start really understanding the extent to which knowledge is power, and the company that has the knowledge is the company or the government or the entity that's going to have the power. And that right now is Google. The governments of the world fully are aware of it. Google CEO Eric Schmidt, I think his name is, I believe he was at the Bilderberg conference. These guys are all deeply involved with all of the major power players, Bilderberg Council on Foreign Relations. And why? Not because they're even necessarily seeking out those connections, but the government knows where the power is, and the government is seeking them out.
Well, we're out of time. We'll have to do this again real soon. Thank you so very much, Catherine. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And remember, startpage.com, alternative to Google.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. And, of course, Catherine Albrecht is working with StartPage, and we recommend it to you. We've been using that as an alternative to Google. They do an excellent job. Well, if you'd like to know about how they're monitoring you, let me suggest Catherine's book, Spy Chips. And we actually carry that, then we carry a 4-tape set on spy chips. It's interviews with various people about how they're using RFID identification to control you. We've got a great 4-DVD set put out by Pastor Billy Crone. 4 DVDs he has on RFID identification. We think it's very important. And what he's done, he's simply taken a lot of video clips put out by IBM and by the other people who are in this digital information about how they're going to control us with these chips, whether it be RFID, Verichips, which they'll inject into us. They're already chipping animals. They are chipping people and military people in other parts of the world. Understand, this is not imaginary. It's very real. There really are people who want to establish a dictatorship in America. And certainly we recommend that you get my talk on the planned police state, and you get the syllabus that goes with that. You need to have this information, and you need to show it to others, and you have my permission with anything that I have done. To make copies of the DVDs, to make copies of the syllabus. As long as you're not selling them, why, get the information out, please. We need to inform the people as rapidly as possible, and we know more and more people are hearing of our ministry, are getting the information. We're involved in a race against time. Fortunately, we have some wonderful allies and people like Catherine and Joyce Rice and Joyce Riley and certainly Alex Jones and Pastor Chris Meyer and Pastor Butch Paul and others. We all work together for the common goal of educating the American people. So again, the book, Spy Chips by Dr. Catherine Albrecht. We have the 4-tape set on spy chips. We have the DVD, and there's 4 DVDs in the set on RFID identification. If you haven't seen Aaron Russo's From Freedom to Fascism, you get something and you ask for a free copy of that. We have copies. We'll be glad to send you one free if you get something else from us. Aaron Russo's From Freedom to Fascism. You need to see it. And they have some wonderful interviews there with Catherine there. And I've met Catherine. I consider her a friend. She's a lovely, very courageous lady, believe me. She's under tremendous pressure. But she's getting the truth out. What are you willing to give up to try to preserve freedom and the lives of your family? And understand, behind all of this are powerful spiritual forces. That's why, of course, you need to get Pastor Billy Crone's DVD sets, and there's 5 DVDs in each set, part 1 and part 2 of The Final Countdown. Pastor Billy Crone has a book based upon that, The Final Countdown, we recommend. And it's really set up like a study book, but actually, of course, all the quotations are there, the sources of the quotations. And then, of course, we actually put them onto CDs, and we have the first 5 of his talks of The Final Countdown in something called Countdown to Armageddon. Countdown to Armageddon, the CDs, the book, the Final Countdown, the DVD sets, part one, part two, each with five DVDs in it, the Final Countdown. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. Could these things really be true? Well, you need to get my talk on the financial Armageddon to find out how they have created this whole financial breakdown. This was not necessary. They've done this intentionally. Why? To impoverish our people. And, of course, out of the coming chaos. And there is going to be coming chaos to justify bringing in their one world government. And, of course, we have an excellent DVD called The Trilateral Commission by Pat Wood. That's Pat Wood. And, of course, it goes into the how they've created this whole financial crisis. This didn't just happen. It's been very carefully planned by wicked people who want to impoverish our people and enslave the world. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.